abstract, so I'm sure I'm the butt of many jokes from that. That's no pun intended. If you haven't read the abstract, look at it and you'll see what I'm getting at. Actually, this part is missing from the abstract, so, or from the, so anyway, it's analysis. So in this talk, really, I'll try to keep it sort of as non-technical as possible because it's, you know, it's morning and actually the effect of the donuts that you had in the beginning are probably wearing off, and the thought of the donuts that are still there is probably sort of plaguing your mind. So I'll just try to keep it as light as possible. And it's really, it's more of an advertising sort of campaign, I guess, really, of some new techniques. So it's actually quite theoretical, and there are some applications in survival analysis to the set index theory, which are due to Gail Ivanov. Actually, myself, sort of being young and foolish, I really work more just on the theory of it, sort of actually things with more novelty. But hopefully these will eventually find applications in topics like actually the modeling of forest fires and other space-time processes. So depending on sort of how time goes and sort of actually how I digress, one thing which I actually do want to do is sort of describe the notion of a set index martingale so that you have sort of an image of what that object is. And then I'll describe some work, actually, which I have done with other collaborators, which might provide some tools in modeling things like the evolution of forest fires. And so once again, this is sort of related to the comment I just made, just sort of where does this talk fit into things is, I suppose, it really is two groups here, two communities, is really the forest fire and ecology researchers and people in stats and probability. And I suppose that they're actually at this workshop, at least, and probably even beyond the workshop, there's sort of problems from this community are being fed, you know, to people in stats and probability, of which I'm a member, and answers are being given back. I suppose maybe the best way of thinking of this is with this talk or with the results I'm presenting, I have no specific application to forest fires right now, although I have one example which might be interesting. It really is some results which might sort of help, actually provide tools which might help sort of in the analysis of such processes. So I'll try to keep it as interesting as possible, and as I said, it's sort of hard to do this topic justice in 45 minutes, so I'll do my best. So as the title sort of betrays, set index martingale, so I mean that's sort of the adjective set index, so actually something more general than a set index martingale is a set index process. And Raphael has actually, alluded to these already. And roughly what it is, and I mean this can be made actually quite abstract, and if you look in the monograph of Gale, it really is in a very general setting with topological spaces. It's sort of a unified framework which includes many different things, so that's why the generality is important. But just to be specific, roughly, if you want, you can just think about the plane for the rest of the talk, even though there's many, you know, like the plane, two-dimensional plane or three-dimensional space, although there's many examples which are sort of non-visual. And roughly what happens is instead of a process, so we've seen a lot of this already in Raphael's talk and other ones, is a stochastic process is a collection of random variables. And you have one random variable for every point time, actually t in the positive axis. So these are very widely studied, Brownian motion, the Poisson process, so on and so forth. So what happens here now is, and I'll sort of tie actually these two such processes in a second, is roughly what happens is you'd have some, so of course you have a forest, I'm not sure if there's really an application, or if actually this would fall into the results I have, but hopefully they would, is something like this. If I had some sort of a base space, an underlying space T, let's say it was a forest, for example, or part of a forest, and then what I could do is look at various subsets, so these are my A's here, so subsets of a fixed set T, and over that region I could have some observations, some random variable, so for example, from an ecology point of view, it could be the number of tree species or other species in a given region. And before you do the observation, of course, that's a random variable. Or if you were to ask, what will it be like 10 years down the road, that would be a random variable. And you'd get a set index process. In this case, if you looked at all polygons, let's say, which could actually fit in that region. So that's generally what a set index process is for every set, every subset. Well, actually not every, but for every subset in a chosen collection, I have an observation over that region. So now it's not at a point, it's over an entire region, it's sort of like a measure. you want to think of it that way. That is on, sorry. Or it's on now anyway, then actually now I can hear myself. So just to give an example, or not an example, but just to tie these processes to things which are more classical, if you wish. So for example, we can recapture that time index situation simply by, I mean, for every point time t, I'll just identify actually this point in time, with the interval a, which is all of the points from 0 up to t. So if I took capital T as actually the positive line, as I have it drawn there, and if I do this association, then I can sort of recapture or actually consider any time index process as a set index process. So it's more general than time index processes. And even for planar processes, such as spatial Poisson process, so for every point I have in space, actually what I can do is, actually trivially in a sense, actually associate the rectangle and really the Poisson process, Poisson process in the plane really is a set index process, actually by nature, because you're counting occurrences in a given region. And here, of course, I can recapture any planar process, which is indexed by points in the plane, by actually just identifying that point, that endpoint with the set A as drawn. So the punchline here with this slide is really sort of the classic situations of either space or time, or if you wish, you can even cross these space-time processes. It can be recaptured in this general set index framework. It is more general than that. Even if I take as my base space T, the plane, I'll just give one example. There's even better examples than this, to be sure, but I mean, just to sort of extend it actually beyond things like rectangles and intervals, is there is a class of sets called the lower layers, which have the following property. And I mean, you could take other sets. Actually, this one I want to mention because this will fall into sort of the general framework which I'd need later, although I might not actually mention these explicitly. So a lower layer is a subset, in this case of the plane. Here I should have a 2, not D. It is a subset of the plane which has the property that if I have a point within the set A, then the closed rectangle, actually drawn as such for any point Z which lies in the set A, is actually entirely contained in A. And I can take the convex lower layers, which would be all sets with such a property, and with the added property that whenever I have 2 points in that set, actually the line segment is entirely within that set. And these are drawn just with a positive quadrant. You can easily extend these definitions to actually regions in the entire actually plane, if you wish. So you could have things like you could have a lower layer or a convex lower layer just as sort of a convex set, which hope I've drawn this convex, a convex set which is containing the origin. So these extend not just to the quadrant, but to actually all of space. And you can almost imagine these sort of actually measuring some region, let's say, once again, in a forest, just to actually try to tie this to the topic of the workshop. So what I'll mention, and really how I got involved in this, is actually through my PhD thesis with Gail Ivanov, and really the motivation, I guess the original motivation from what I understand it, for set index processes is with empirical processes. And there's a lot of literature on that. So these set index processes themselves have been around since the 80s, probably even before that in many contexts. So for myself, if someone ever asks me what is a set index process, I always tell them the empirical process. So roughly what the empirical process does is if I had a sample, so this is a point process, once again it ties to the earlier lecture, or talk, sorry, is if I drop a sample, an IID sample, let's say with a two-dimensional distribution, and then if I have any sort of set here, I just drew any sort of squiggly looking set, then what happens is I would just take the relative, number of points in the sample which lie in that set. And that was sort of one of the main examples in my thesis was related to empirical processes and sort of limit theorems for these set-indexed empirical processes. And the reason why you would like to look at a rich class of sets is to improve power and things like to improve power in the Kolmogorov-Smirnov statistic. So there are some very practical reasons why you would be looking at sets more general than just rectangles, even just for empirical processes. And certainly for modeling, I think there's probably a lot of actually arguments in favor of looking at things beyond sort of just point indexed. So just sort of moving along. Oops, I don't want to use that yet. I think I'll leave that slide on there instead. So now what I'd like to do is, if possible, I'll just try my best at this, to sort of define the notion of a set index martingale. So if you haven't seen the notion of a martingale, this is sort of like doubly sort of confusing, I'm sure. But and there is a typo here, by the way. This should just simply be a single, actually index, but I'm sure you never caught that. If I hadn't pointed that out, you would have let that go. But anyway, so a set index martingale, one thing I'll do, and I just have some things thrown down on the slide, just almost like showing your passport at the airport. They don't really read through all of it, but this is sort of proof or whatever that there are extra conditions which are needed on the sets A. I cannot simply take, you know, just sort of arbitrary sets. I have to have some structure on them. It still is very flexible, but still you have to add some structure. And there's one here that the intersection of two non-empty sets in A has to be non-empty. And then there's another, actually condition, which is roughly saying that any set, I have to have some sort of a general base set, which is sort of acting like the rational numbers or the dyadics, if you've heard of that, so that I can approximate any set in A in a very systematic way. So this is just sort of to help along with the actually mechanics in proving theorems. And there's a very wide range of examples in which you can very easily produce these approximating sequences. I'll say nothing more than that, though, at this point. One thing I will say is, so we started off anyway, just if you can sort of keep up with the, actually all of the levels here. So we start off with a collection A of sets. So our set index process itself is, you know, we start off with a collection A of sets, and here I have two specific examples, and then for every element in this class of sets, I have a random variable. And actually the first thing to do is to define, or if to generalize, if you wish, actually the notion of a rectangle. Oops. So if you just think in terms of the line, of course you have a notion of points. So here it could be a point T. And of course if I have a point S, then I can define what's, you know, actually a half-open interval, an increment, if you wish. Excuse me. And in the plane, actually, the corresponding notion would be if I took just two points, and I'll use complex notation, I guess, Zs. So you have a notion of points, either in actually one dimension or in two dimensions, so either for time-indexed or, well, for planar or spatial, could it actually be three-dimensional. And you have a notion of both actually points and also of increments. And this class C that I have written here is really actually meant to sort of generalize the notion of increments, or actually of rectangles, I shouldn't say increments, of rectangles in this actually slightly more abstract setting. And actually the nice thing is, of course, if I had any stochastic process as such, X, then I could define an increment over, actually the increment of the process would simply be xt minus xs, and I'll simply say that this actually messy formula, this inclusion-exclusion, is meant to play the role or to mimic this sort of actually basic sort of idea. And the idea is if I start off with a set index process, I mean under actually certain conditions, I can extend it that to the class of all, I mean just think rectangles or just, you know, like these kind of rectangles or intervals, half-closed intervals, I can extend it under mild conditions. There's also a notion of a filtration here. Once again, I'll skip it. Either you're very familiar with that notion or you're not. So actually filtration information structure is very important. You've heard in many talks that that is sort of actually something which could be, which is actually both useful and essential in the point process literature. I haven't had an example here drawn, but I'm going to probably skip that for the sake of time. I think that picture captures essentially what I want to say. And what I'll do here is very briefly and sort of heuristically define what a set index martingale is. And sort of as a bonus, I actually have a definition of a time index martingale, if you haven't seen that definition. So once again, I have this information structure, which is essential to the definition of a martingale. Sort of having a notion of a past at a point T, all of the information up to time t, that's sort of actually what, well, in the time index case, you'd actually denote that small f of t, which would be all of the information I've accumulated that from my observations, from my random variables, up to time t. Excuse me. So what happens now is I will call a set index process. So for every blob, I have a random variable. A set index process is said to be a strong martingale. There are several notions. If I can extend it to all of those rectangles, that class C that I had mentioned. Oh, I have it over here, sorry. If it's adapted, which is simply to say that actually what I will observe over the region A is measurable with respect to actually the information up to A. Once again, it's a technical condition that don't actually worry about it. And finally, this is actually the main condition, is if the conditional expectation over an increment, or over a rectangle, sorry, the increment is over the rectangle. Actually, given the history, and I have a slide for this, so this is some sort of a notion of history now in the set index setting. If this is zero, I have a formal definition for this, actually for the sigma algebra, for that information structure. I'll show a slide in a second, so don't really worry about that. Actually, what I do want to say, though, is that this really is a strict, strict generalization of the time index case. What happens is a time index martingale or a time index stochastic process is a martingale if, and once again, I would have this information structure instead of FA for every set in A, I would have FS for every time point, small s. And what would happen there is a process X would be a one-dimensional martingale or a time index martingale if what I see over the increment, actually given the history, is zero, actually conditional on the past is zero. And this, actually just by analogy, just going back to analogy, since XC is an analog of that, this really is an analog of this classic sort of situation. And martingales really are a very useful tool in many things. So just to show a picture, actually once again, just that you have something to sort of hold on to, because I guess this is a bit, some of this is sort of non-visual in a sense, I guess. So once again, just going back to the plane, if I were to take as my class, the class of all rectangles, I had a picture of that before, this would be an example of a set index strong history, if you wish. So what happens is this GC star, if I had somehow, this would be, if I took this set, and then I actually subtracted, let's say, this set, and this set. So C is, so many slides, a little time here, sorry, so that C would be an element of here. If I took as my class A all of the rectangles which start at the origin and go up to some point, so that would be my class of sets. It's something very simple, just all rectangles. So this would be a typical set in that class. And actually this history, actually the history, the past, actually what I am taking as the history is really everything which is not in the strict future. There are other notions of history in the set index setting. This is, that for certain technical reasons, the one to sort of run with, if you wish. So this is the history now. So it isn't as basic as what we have. Of course, it's very easy. In time, everything is ordered linearly. So of course, the history is a very actually clearly defined concept. It's simply everything before time S. So here what's sort of actually the harder work in that is to actually define a history. And this is what we take is really all information of everything which has happened. You can imagine having a random variable that for every set actually not touching here, and all of that information together would be my strong history. And that is what I condition with when I define my strong martingales. So that's just so that you have an impression of what the definition is. If you do forget after the slide leaves what a strong martingale actually is, don't worry about it. Just actually remember that you didn't actually have a notion of it for a second. Like I said, I really am showing so much information here, so I apologize for that. Some examples of strong martingales, just to sort of convince you that these are useful objects or they're important objects to study. The empirical process itself is a counting process. Of course, if I got rid of this, it would be a counting process. If I add in, it's not a martingale. Those conditional expectations would simply be greater than or equal to zero. If instead, though, if I multiply these indicators, which you've seen in the previous talk, by, let's say, IID, or actually normal 0, 1 weights, then actually what I get out of this is a set index martingale. So there is, and there's a way to sort of study the empirical process by studying this sort of associated weighted empirical process. These are the weights. So there's a nice example here which appeared, I guess, first in Burke and also in the monograph. Actually not the monograph, but in the technical report, which we had, I think, put together after my thesis, I believe, that appears there, and you'd corrected one error for my thesis in that, so that's probably the best source if anyone wants to read up on that. Gail, I'm actually talking to Gail here. It's in the monograph as well. Actually, the monograph actually probably contains most of these results. And also the spatial Poisson process with compensator. Actually, lambda is also a strong martingale, so that's sort of extending, I guess, that's a Watanabe, is it called? Actually, characterization has been extended to actually the set indexed Poisson process. So those are some examples. Just for other examples, here's one. I'll just put this slide on, and don't worry once again if the technicalities seem a bit too much but for this time of the morning, but there's something called a set index Brownian motion. So, I mean, there's actually the Poisson process in the plane really is a set index process. You can imagine having some region and you're counting the number of occurrences in that region. And there's also a notion of a set index Brownian motion, which essentially shares a lot of the properties of the one-dimensional Brownian motion in that we have actually a structure for the joint distribution over independent increments. Actually, sort of leave it at that. There is a notion of a set index Brownian motion, and if it has just some very mild path properties, it will be a strong martingale. Now, finally, this is sort of my contribution, or my sort of actually closest connection, if you wish, to the topic in the workshop. There is an example, actually a nice example, which appeared. I guess it was sort of a byproduct of the thesis of Dr. Fang with Andre and Gail, and this appeared in, I can't remember the paper, I have the references here anyway, is a contact infection process, which is, and I mean this really begs a diagram. So roughly what happens, so I have the text here, but I'll just sort of describe it actually through the picture that I have. Oops. I'm really actually going quite slow, but anyway. Actually, roughly what happens is I have, actually picture a very simplified forest where I have a tree at every lattice point, so 1, 1, 1, 2, or actually 0, 1, 0, 2, so on and so forth, and an infection enters a forest, so let's say sort of, I mean this could be sort of the outer edge of the forest, or maybe there's a wind blowing which is bringing in that infection. And it's going to affect the health of the tree. So really, actually the infection actually enters the forest through the axes themselves. And actually, so what we assume is that the health of the tree, oops, I made my pointer here, actually the health of a tree in the forest will only depend on the health of this neighbor and of that neighbor. So of course, if I do have a wind, that sort of is what's going to happen, I suppose. And here you're almost assuming that that's too far away. Maybe that's not really the mechanism for the spread of the infection, but roughly that's sort of the idea, is that the actually health of this tree depends only on those two. Well, I mean, conditionally only depends on those two. And if I simply define that for each tree, if I have actually zero if it's healthy and one if it's infected, of course that would be after the infection passes through beforehand, it's simply a random variable. Then if I take any sort of region here, I drew a lower layer, then XA, I can define a very natural set index process, which would be the number of infected trees in that region. So I could look at different regions, and of course I could also look at the sets in C, which are not always attached to zero, and I could simply count the number of infected trees in any region. And one thing I thought about, just from seeing all of these very nice slides with pictures, is actually this would extend for sure if I were to actually sort of actually discretize or actually split up a forest or some region into a grid. And I guess this goes against one of the talks where they said the northeast corner is the safest place to build a cabin. I guess this is saying it's the most dangerous, the forest is spreading that way, but anyway. So what would happen is for each actually small region, if I did have a forest, this would probably be actually best at sort of actually modeling sort of just like the local dynamics of a fire. Of course, a fire isn't so simple that there's a wind and it's just burning in that direction, as I've actually discovered myself. I mean, both from observation and from this workshop. Actually, but still, just for this sort of simplified model, this could be souped up, of course, is if I defined, so now instead of, actually, tree is healthy, tree isn't healthy, if I sort of say, in any one of these small squares, I'll have one if it does eventually burn out when the fire reaches or enters this portion of the forest, or zero if it doesn't, and XA could be, XA then would be the total, if I have it as the sum, it would be the total burn area. This itself is not, actually, once again, this is just going to be a non-negative random variable. It is not in and of itself a martingale. If you center these, actually, properly, and that's actually discussed in the paper, how to do that, just a very natural sort of, actually, standard sort of step. If you center those, actually, then you do get a, then you will get a strong martingale with respect to the natural history or the filtration generated by the process itself. So there is a strong martingale structure in this if I sort of subtract off a certain term, a certain, I guess, conditional expectation. So in the 15 minutes, really, I actually was not planning on going into any great detail anyway, so I'll just simply use the remaining time to sort of advertise some results which, I mean, so here's an example of a process which might be of interest to the people in this workshop, and just to mention some results which, I'll put this here, which are useful in analyzing these processes. So I've, actually, of course, I mean, here there is a strong martingale structure once I do some centering. So how can I analyze these processes, or is there some, actually, what are some tools that are at my disposal now, actually, which tools have been developed which can help me analyze such processes? So the first one is, I mean, it's important in one dimension or just for an IID sequence, and it's important for stochastic processes as well, are central limit theorems. So once again, this has appeared in the monograph, and that is the title of the monograph. This was a result in my thesis, although parts of this were sort of improved actually a bit later as they appear in the technical report of the Ottawa Carleton Institute. So that's why I have this and not my thesis as a reference. And roughly, central limit theorems for stochastic processes. So of course, in first year stats, if you recall that, if you're in ecology, maybe it's been a long time since you've taken a course in first year stats, which would say sort of actually random variables converging to a normal random variable, for example, X bar, the empirical average, actually converging to a normal 0, 1 random variable when you actually divide by the right thing. For stochastic processes, there's also an analog of central limit theorems, which is now saying that the stochastic processes in distribution in some sense are converging to a Brownian motion. And we have the same thing, of course, for us. It's a set index Brownian motion, and these are set index processes, but there is such a result, and that's what I'll just very briefly touch on here. And the reason why these, why results like this are useful is the same reason as in first-year statistics, is these processes might be very complicated, but you can approximate them by a nicer process, which is a set index Brownian motion. And just to draw a picture of sort of where you might use that, let's say, so here I have it drawn for the contact infection model, but I guess it would apply equally well with this burn area example, is I could look at something like, I could start off, oops, sorry, let me grab a piece of paper. So I could start off with a contact infection model. And let's say I'm looking, this is sort of a kilometer, maybe that's not the right resolution, I'm just trying to give some sort of touchstone example. And here I have some trees which are situated as such. And here is my set A, I mean, as we view it ourselves sort of on this scale. So here, of course, is only really 3 points, it's not really covering much. But what I could do is sort of, so this would be X1, I should have had X sub 1 of A. And how I can define new processes is I could actually simply rescale things according to space. So now if I sort of backed up, if the plane went up a couple, actually 100 feet or actually a kilometer or whatever, if I looked at a 2 kilometer resolution, but really with the same set, if you wish, and sort of measured the health of the forest over the same looking set, it's really actually rescaling. I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. Either I'm stepping back at the picture and I have the same set A, or else the set A itself is growing at sort of a rate of 2, actually a power of 2. And then, of course, I can just increase that trend and then look over an even larger region. And once again, A is essentially the same, just sort of blown up, just dilated. A is being dilated. That's maybe the best way of thinking of it. And in fact, there is a result, actually a strong central limit theorem, a strong functional central limit theorem, in the paper that I had mentioned earlier, which is saying that these processes, once again, I have to center these, I have to subtract something. It isn't just simply the contact infection process. There is a strong central limit theorem which says that these processes converge almost surely to a Brownian bridge. I'm not sure if it's a tied-down Brownian bridge. I can't recall. And really, this would correspond to actually a set index process. I mean, the result they have in their paper really actually corresponds to a set index process where I just simply take rectangles, not actually sets as fancy as that. So there, in fact, is a result. So in other words, you can study the contact infection process. It's a very complex process, but it behaves, if I sort of scale things, it does behave like according to the result there, like a two-dimensional Brownian motion, which is also a set index Brownian motion, once again, if I identify points with sets. What I will do is just briefly sort of say what the result is, what the central limit theorem is, and this is quite technical, I mean, probably even within the probability community. So I'll just simply sort of mention some ideas. Actually, one of the essential notions, and this is sort of like a compensator that Rafael had mentioned, is a notion of a quadratic variation. That's sort of that's a very important notion in the study of martingales, actually, period. But for central limit theorems, that turns out to be one of the very important concepts to study. And what I will simply say is actually one of the steps in my thesis. This is a while ago. Was actually to sort of devise a notion of quadratic variation for these strong martingales, which would sort of satisfy the necessary properties and be useful, let's say, in central limit theorems. So there is such a notion of quadratic variation, which is simply saying, what do I have to subtract from the square of what happens over here so that I get zero? So, of course, this itself, if I didn't subtract anything, that would just be a non-negative random variable that would be greater than zero. And this is a random variable which sort of compensates for it. And quadratic variation is coming from the fact that I have a square here. It's quadratic. So there is such a notion, and there's some technicalities here. Of course, you could look, once again, in the monograph. All of these results are contained therein. What I will simply say is that there are actually nice situations where this can be calculated. And, for example, for the empirical process, actually for the weighted empirical process, that's been done already. There's a nice explicit form of this, so it isn't some very actually strange abstract notion. There are some examples where this has been calculated explicitly. And also for Brownian motion itself, there is some sort of a notion of a variance measure. I just sort of actually passed that slide very quickly. But Brownian motion itself has a quadratic variation, which I call a star quadratic variation for technical reasons, and it's just a deterministic measure, lambda. So really all I want to do now is to simply put a slide up and show you what the result is. And this is true. This is really, this mimics what you would see for one-dimensional, for a sequence of one-dimensional martingales. If I had a whole sequence of martingales, actually, what conditions do I need for all of these processes, a sequence of processes, to converge to a Brownian motion? And roughly what you need is that the jumps in the martingales will become smaller and smaller in a certain sense. I can't have big jumps. It has to sort of act like Brownian motion in the limit, which means, and Brownian motion, if you recall or if you've seen this, actually has, actually not smooth paths, but continuous paths. So the processes have to behave that way in the limit. Here's something which you wouldn't see in the standard central limit theorem. But one other thing is that the compensators, or the, I think, the quadratic variations of the time index martingales would have to converge to the quadratic variation of the Brownian motion process. And that's really what you see in this result. There's some sort of a moment condition. There's some technicalities here, of course, whatever anyway, but these are actually readily satisfied in most examples. So you have some condition, and once again, even for these set-indexed, actually strong martingales, these very abstract quantities, essentially what you need is that the jumps, in some sense, is a way to sort of define what you mean by the jump of these processes. Actually, they have to become smooth. The sample paths, if you wish, of these processes have to become smooth. And the star quadratic variations, or the quadratic variations of these strong martingales, have to converge, let's say, in probability to some limit, deterministic limit, And under these conditions, what will happen is the strong martingales will converge in distribution, I'll just put that in quotes, I won't make that formal here, to a set index Brownian motion which has covariant structure which is dictated by lambda. In the remaining minutes, I'll simply mention that there's two other applications. So this is maybe the main one, and I'm glad that I've gotten through this, and maybe I spent a lot of time or more time than I'd anticipated on drawing some pictures, but I'm happy I did that as well. There's two other sort of applications or things that I've been working on or have worked on with my collaborator at the Hebrew University, Diane Saada. And this probably stems over the last 5 years. We sort of finally wrapped up two projects, which are actually both of which will appear. So one other actually notion which might prove useful if the set index methodology is employed in, let's say, modeling forest fires, is there is now a notion of a set index Itô integral. And this is really what would go into actually things like set index stochastic differential equations. If you want to model the actually dynamics, actually one of the key objects is an Itô integral. So this could prove useful, and it really is just a generalization of the classic Itô integral. And this is actually more technical. I mean, the slides that I had here are, in fact, more technical than what I had shown before. So I don't think I'll have a lot of arguments if I skip them. No? I guess what I'll say here is really, actually, most of the work was in actually defining a notion of a predictable process in the set index framework. So once again, I'll just simply skip ahead. So I guess the talk is mostly about the central limit theorem. Actually, the integral itself, what I'll simply say here is that there is a notion of the integral, and it does satisfy, I mean, there still is much work to be done on the integral itself, but it does satisfy most of the properties which you do expect or which you would see in the classic one-dimensional Itô integral, which is what goes into or which is sort of the main sort of tool in analyzing stochastic differential equations, which Reg has mentioned actually have some say in sort of modeling, let's say, the perimeter of a fire. So maybe these may also actually prove useful. This object might also prove useful in the analysis of such objects. And roughly what happens is you start off, I mean, what happens in the integral, what I'll simply say is that you have a martingale integrator, which could be a set index Brownian motion, the set index process. You have a process actually here in integrand, which is predictable, and as I said, that was really the actually big technical hurdle, was sort of devising actually a notion of predictability. And what you get in the end is the process itself. If you look at the integral itself, the resulting integral as a set index process, you have a strong martingale property, you can calculate its quadratic variation, and you also have some nice stopping theorems. So there's probably enough machinery to already start doing some very interesting things with that. And how I'll wrap up is by simply having a slide here saying that there's also a notion of set index stopping lines, which actually, once again, if this is a methodology a person wants to attempt to apply to actually the evolution of forest fires, space-time evolution of forest fires, it actually might be a very useful entity. This is a generalization of what's called a stopping time. And of course, actually in time, that's all you have is a stopping time, which would be actually a random time at which when you stop the process at that time, the process might have some nice properties. And actually the whole notion of stopping is sort of central to the martingale theory. It's very important. And I mean, actually in general, roughly, this is just sort of extending what was done by Elie Mertzbach in the 80s, because in the plane, even in the plane, things already start to get complicated. You actually have two notions of stopping in the plane. Actually, in the plane, you could have the notion of a stopping point, a random point in the plane at which if I stop the process or if I evaluate my stochastic process at that point, I have certain properties. And then there's also the notion of a stopping line, which really is just a non-increasing or decreasing line, which is a line which has this property. And these set index stopping lines are really generalizing this notion, the notion of a stopping line, to this more abstract setting. The notion of a stopping point is actually due to Gale and Elie. That's called a stopping set. So that notion has been sort of extended already, I guess, in the mid-90s. So this sort of complements the notion of a stopping point. And I will use this as my stopping point, and actually thank you very much for listening.
I think in the interest of time,
yep.
We should use the break.
good.